Have you ever wondered what it would take to push someone over the edge, literally? Mary Kubica's psychological thriller, She's Not Sorry, explores this question with chilling precision, following critical care nurse Megan Michaels as her life spirals into a web of deception, violence, and murder. This New York Times bestseller has captivated readers since its 2023 release, with celebrities like Reese Witherspoon featuring it in her book club and calling it impossible to put down. The novel's exploration of identity theft and moral boundaries resonates deeply in our digital age, where the line between victim and perpetrator can blur with frightening speed. As one of Kubica's most acclaimed works in her impressive thriller repertoire, this story forces us to confront an uncomfortable question. How far would you go to protect everything you love? The story begins when Megan Michaels, a 40-year-old critical care nurse and single mother, encounters a new patient in the ICU, Caitlin Beckett, a 32-year-old woman who has suffered catastrophic injuries after allegedly jumping from a pedestrian bridge, with part of her skull removed to relieve brain pressure, multiple fractures, and severe trauma throughout her body. Caitlin's survival seems miraculous yet precarious. Her medical chart reads like a horror story: shattered pelvis, collapsed lung, ruptured spleen, and extensive internal bleeding that required multiple emergency surgeries. Megan finds herself strangely drawn to this comatose patient, whose injuries remind her of her own sister's suicide years earlier. The similarities are haunting: both young women, both found broken at the base of a bridge, both showing signs of defensive wounds that didn't quite align with suicide. Megan's sister Sarah had been 28 when she died, and the familiar ache of that loss resurfaces as she tends to Caitlin's wounds. When Caitlin's parents, Tom and Amelia Beckett, arrive at the hospital, they present as a wealthy, well-connected couple from Boston's elite social circles. They appear appropriately distraught, but something about their behavior strikes Megan as odd. Their designer clothes and perfectly maintained appearances seem incongruous with parents in crisis. They claim they hadn't been close with Caitlin in years and didn't even know she'd returned from California, where she'd moved to pursue acting. Their explanations about the estrangement feel rehearsed, mechanical. As Megan develops a rapport with the Becketts, they begin requesting her specifically as Caitlin's nurse, bringing her coffee from expensive cafes and asking detailed questions about her life. This special attention makes Megan feel valued, though her colleague Luke warns her there's something strange about them. Luke notices Mrs. Beckett's seemingly performative emotions, crying without tears, avoiding eye contact when speaking, checking her phone during critical medical updates. These subtle inconsistencies plant the first seeds of doubt in Megan's mind. The case takes a dramatic turn when police reveal Caitlin didn't attempt suicide. She was pushed from the bridge. A witness, a jogger named Marcus Chen, had seen two people in what appeared to be an altercation before she fell, describing sounds of an argument and a woman's scream. This revelation coincides with Megan's encounter with a mysterious man lurking in Caitlin's hospital room. Tall, slender, with dark, curly hair and vivid blue eyes under a green trucker cap. When confronted, he claims to be Caitlin's friend from her acting days in Los Angeles, but his cold demeanor and nervous fidgeting suggest otherwise. The pieces of this puzzle begin shifting, revealing that nothing about Caitlin Beckett's case is as straightforward as it initially seemed. Security footage from that night shows multiple figures on the bridge, but the grainy quality and poor lighting make identification impossible. Beyond the hospital walls, Megan navigates the complexities of single motherhood with her 16-year-old daughter Sienna in Chicago's rapidly changing Ravenswood neighborhood. Their relationship oscillates between moments of profound connection, sharing late-night ice cream and conversations about their dreams, and periods of friction sparked by typical teenage rebellion. The aftermath of Megan's divorce from Ben 3 years ago still reverberates through their daily lives, manifesting in Sienna's occasional angry outbursts and Megan's struggle to maintain boundaries without becoming overprotective. Their modest two-bedroom apartment, once a source of pride when Megan first secured it, now feels increasingly precarious. Recent incidents, a break-in two doors down, a woman attacked while walking her dog at dusk, suspicious figures lingering near the building's entrance have transformed their home from a sanctuary into a source of constant vigilance. Megan finds herself double-checking locks and installing additional security measures, all while trying not to transmit her growing anxiety to Sienna. The challenges of mothering a teenager in the digital age become apparent when Megan discovers Sienna alone with classmate Nico, supposedly working on geometry homework. The scene unfolds like a carefully choreographed dance of teenage rebellion. Sienna's carefully selected crop top hidden under a sweatshirt, her practiced casual use of profanity, and the way she positions herself just slightly closer to Nico than necessary. Megan recognizes her own teenage self in these moments, the desperate desire to appear sophisticated, the testing of boundaries, the rush of first attraction. Yet, as a mother, each of these small rebellions feels like a potential step toward danger. Financial pressures add another layer of complexity to their lives. While Megan's position as a senior nurse at Chicago Memorial and the modest inheritance from her grandmother provide basic security, the reality of single parenthood stretches every dollar thin. When Sienna needs braces, or when the car requires unexpected repairs, Megan feels the weight of sole responsibility crushing down. Her ex-husband Ben's passive-aggressive comments about her frivolous spending, even on necessities like winter boots or school supplies, reveal the ongoing power dynamics of their failed marriage. The discovery of an asymmetry on her mammogram becomes a tipping point in Megan's carefully balanced life. The requirement for additional testing sends her into a spiral of worst-case scenarios. Who would care for Sienna if something happened to her? How would they maintain their standard of living on disability? The 3-day wait for follow-up testing becomes an exercise in maintaining composure while internally unraveling. These fears crystallize her vulnerability as a single parent, the terrifying reality that she alone stands between her daughter and potential hardship. These accumulated pressures, financial strain, safety concerns, health anxieties, and the daily challenges of single parenthood create a perfect storm of vulnerability in Megan's life. Her isolation and desperate need to protect her relationship with Sienna make her particularly susceptible to manipulation, setting the stage for the extraordinary events that follow. Each decision she makes, however questionable, becomes more comprehensible when viewed through the lens of a mother fighting to maintain stability in an increasingly unstable world. Amidst her growing concerns about Caitlin Beckett and the stresses of single motherhood, Megan reconnects with Natalie Cohen, a former high school classmate she bumps into at her divorce support group. Nat appears polished and put together, though Megan notices a bruise she tries to hide. When they meet for coffee days later, Nat begins to reveal troubling details about her marriage to a man named Declan, who she describes as perfect, according to family and friends, but who can get mad sometimes. Their conversation is abruptly cut short when Nat spots someone watching them through the window and flees in panic. Later that evening, Megan finds Nat huddled outside a comedy club with a swollen lip and bruised cheekbone. Nat confesses that Declan had convinced her to return home with promises of change, only to violently assault her when she gently questioned his commitment to therapy. Despite this abuse, Nat still blames herself for ruining their evening. Examining Nat's phone, Megan discovers Declan has been tracking her location through the Find My app. Though Nat refuses to file a restraining order, fearing it would only enrage Declan further, she eventually accepts Megan's offer to stay at her apartment. This moment of compassion creates an intimate bond between the women, leading them to share their deepest secrets over wine. Megan confesses something she's never told anyone. Sienna isn't actually Ben's biological daughter. After temporarily breaking off their engagement, Megan had a one-night stand with a stranger. When she and Ben reconciled 2 weeks later, they married, and soon after, Megan discovered she was pregnant. DNA testing confirmed her fear. Ben wasn't the father. But she's kept this secret for 16 years, even convincing herself that Sienna's blonde hair came from Ben's mother. Nat responds with understanding and compassion, telling Megan she needs to forgive herself. This moment of vulnerability and acceptance makes their friendship feel like a lifeline for Megan, who has been increasingly lonely since her divorce. What Megan doesn't realize is that this seemingly supportive friendship will soon become the catalyst for unimaginable consequences. As Megan grows closer to Nat, disturbing inconsistencies begin to surface. After a frightening incident where Megan receives a phone call from someone claiming to have kidnapped Sienna and demanding $10,000, she discovers she's been victim of a virtual kidnapping scam. Though police explain these scams are common, Megan can't shake the feeling she was specifically targeted. Meanwhile, Caitlin's case grows more complex when Megan encounters a man named Milo Finch lurking near the hospital. He reveals a shocking story. Caitlin was a waitress he fired for stealing from his restaurant in California. In revenge, she broke into his home and downloaded child pornography onto his computer, then sent it to people he knew. He spent 5 years in prison, lost his restaurant, and his wife took their son away. Now, a registered sex offender unable to find proper work, he's tracked Caitlin across the country seeking justice. When Caitlin's roommate warns Megan that Caitlin hated her parents and ominously suggests the danger is already inside, Megan begins to question everything she thought she knew about the Becketts. Mr. Beckett privately shares that Caitlin was a difficult child who would manipulate situations and even called Child Protective Services on her mother once. He portrays Caitlin as emotionally abusive toward her mother, creating a disturbing family portrait at odds with the concerned parents Megan first met. Most shocking of all, Megan discovers Nat has disappeared, along with all their Facebook messages. When she investigates further, she learns the preschool where Nat claimed to work has never heard of her, and the law firm where Declan supposedly worked confirms he doesn't exist. His photo on their brochure is just a stock image. The devastating truth emerges when Megan contacts Emily Miller, an old high school friend of Nat's. The real Natalie Cohen and her entire family died 19 years ago in a car crash. The woman calling herself Nat has been an imposter all along, using Megan's vulnerability to gain her trust and access to her home. Days after uncovering Nat's web of deception, Megan spots a familiar figure crossing Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago's bustling afternoon crowd. The sight of her distinctive red coat triggers an immediate surge of rage. All the stolen money, the missing wedding rings, the months of calculated emotional manipulation crystallizing into a single moment of recognition. Without thinking, Megan abandons her shopping bags and pursues her through the maze of city streets, past startled pedestrians and honking taxis. The chase winds through narrow alleys and across busy intersections until they reach a pedestrian bridge spanning the Metra train tracks, a location that makes Megan's blood run cold with its eerie similarity to the bridge where Caitlin Beckett supposedly fell to her death. The metal walkway stretches above multiple sets of gleaming rails, the late afternoon sun casting long shadows through the industrial architecture. When the woman's boot catches on an uneven section of decking, she stumbles. Megan lunges forward, catching her by the hood of her coat. Pinned against the railing, Nat finally drops her facade. She confesses everything with a chilling smile. Declan was pure fiction. The bruises were self-inflicted. Every tearful conversation and friendly gesture had been carefully orchestrated to win Megan's trust and access her life. Most infuriatingly, Megan's own wedding ring glints on the woman's finger, a trophy from her successful con. The confession turns cruel as Nat begins to taunt Megan, dissecting her marriage to Ben with surgical precision. "He never really loved you," she sneers. "I could tell from the first time I saw you together." When she mockingly references Caitlin's suicide, "At least your sister had the courage to jump," something fundamental breaks inside Megan. In a surge of blind fury, she shoves Nat backward with all her strength, watching in slow-motion horror as the woman topples over the railing. The impact on the tracks below echoes through the steel framework. The woman lies motionless, her dark hair lifting slightly in the wind from a passing train on the adjacent track. In the strange silence that follows, Megan realizes no witnesses remain on the deserted bridge. Moving on autopilot, she descends the stairs, retrieves her ring from the unconscious woman's hand, and flees the scene, leaving her for dead. This violent act transforms Megan from victim to perpetrator, crossing a moral line that can never be uncrossed. The bridge becomes both physical location and metaphorical threshold, marking her descent from justified anger into criminal violence. The cruel irony isn't lost on her. She's now guilty of the very crime she believed was committed against Caitlin Beckett. What Megan fails to grasp in her panic-stricken flight is that the woman she just pushed isn't merely a skilled con artist. She is Caitlin Beckett herself, who survived her original fall and engineered this elaborate scheme from Megan's hospital bed. This shocking revelation explains the nagging sense of familiarity Megan felt from their first encounter, though Caitlin's strategic use of bandages and self-inflicted injuries had prevented full recognition. The deception proves far more intricate and personally motivated than a simple confidence scheme, with roots stretching back to family secrets neither sister had fully confronted. Megan's carefully constructed world shatters on an otherwise ordinary Tuesday afternoon when Mrs. Beckett's voice cuts through the hospital room's steady beeping. "Her eyes," she insists, gripping her husband's arm with trembling fingers. "She opened her eyes. You saw it, Megan, didn't you?" The words hit Megan like physical blows as she stands frozen, her heart thundering against her ribs. This wasn't supposed to happen. Caitlin was supposed to remain in the coma, slipping away quietly without ever waking. When Caitlin's eyes flutter open again, they lock onto Megan's with frightening clarity. The recognition in them is unmistakable, and Megan's blood runs cold as the devastating truth crashes over her. The woman she violently pushed from Harrison Bridge 3 weeks ago, the woman she'd known as Nat, is the same patient she's been dutifully caring for in room 412. Caitlin Beckett knows everything, and the weight of this knowledge threatens to suffocate Megan where she stands. Caitlin's recovery accelerates at an alarming pace. Her Glasgow coma scale scores climb from 6 to 9, then to 12, marking significant neurological improvement. Each small victory celebrated by the medical team drives Megan deeper into panic. During sleepless nights, she imagines Sienna growing up without her, missing first days of school, dance recitals, graduations, while Megan rots in prison for attempted murder. The memory of Caitlin's final words before the push haunts her. "I'll tell them what you told me. I'll tell them who Sienna's real dad is and how you're a witch." The situation reaches its breaking point when Caitlin manages her first words. You, she rasps, her fingers closing around Megan's wrist with surprising strength. In that moment, Megan makes a choice that will haunt her forever. After her shift ends, she returns to the unit, stealing insulin from Mr. Peterson's room in 415. With practiced efficiency, she disables Caitlin's monitoring alarms, ignoring the woman's weakened struggles as she administers multiple injections. Caitlin's eyes widen in terror as Megan deliberately moves the call button beyond reach and retreats to watch from the nurse's station as the insulin takes effect. Caitlin's skin growing clammy, her heart rate dropping steadily. When the code blue is called, Megan performs her most convincing act yet. Through carefully crafted tears, she confesses to accidentally administering insulin meant for another patient, claiming confusion over similar names led to the dosing error. She knows the autopsy will confirm insulin's presence, but her immediate honesty about the mistake provides crucial protection. Healthcare systems are designed to shield practitioners from genuine medication errors. The resuscitation team works frantically, but their efforts prove futile. Caitlin Beckett dies at 3:47 a.m., exactly as Megan planned, her secrets dying with her. Just when Megan believes she's escaped consequences for her actions, her world shatters in a moment of pure terror. Her colleague, Luke Albrecht, who had been quietly investigating inconsistencies in Caitlin's death, orchestrates a devastating confrontation at an abandoned construction site on the outskirts of town. With Sienna held at gunpoint against the backdrop of exposed steel beams and half-finished concrete walls, Luke reveals he's pieced together the truth about that fatal night. The construction site's emptiness amplifies every word as he details his discoveries, using Sienna as leverage to force Megan's confession. The situation escalates rapidly as Megan attempts to negotiate, her medical training utterly useless in the face of raw desperation. Police officers, who had been tracking Megan's unusual movements, arrive on scene with weapons drawn. The tension reaches its breaking point in a cacophony of shouted commands and sudden gunfire. In the chaos, Sienna pitches forward, her small body covered in crimson. Megan's world stops. The sight of her daughter lying motionless, soaked in blood, seems like divine retribution for her own transgressions. At St. Michael's Hospital, amid the sterile whites and blues of the emergency department, Megan receives news that feels like a miracle. Despite being covered in blood, Sienna is physically unharmed. The blood belonged to Luke, who didn't survive the police intervention. This near tragedy forces Megan into a brutal self-examination about the ripple effects of deception and the true cost of protecting secrets. Later that evening, when Ben overhears a whispered conversation between Sienna and Megan about biological fathers, Megan's well-practiced lies spring forth automatically. She smoothly fabricates a story about tetanus shots. Across the room, Sienna's eyes meet her mother's, and in that glance, a pact is sealed to protect their secret indefinitely. The epilogue finds Megan returning to work at Memorial Hospital 27 days later. The nursing board's investigation concluded with surprising leniency. She's placed on a 12-month probation but retains her license. Her colleagues welcome her back warmly, none aware that the supposed medication error with Caitlin was itself another fabrication. That evening, in a twist that chills Megan to her core, Ben presents her with her missing engagement ring, claiming he discovered it while cleaning his condo. The revelation strikes her like a physical blow. She knows with absolute certainty that Caitlin had stolen it, raising disturbing questions about Ben's relationship with her former friend. As Ben leaves with Sienna for their regular Wednesday night dinner, Megan stands in her doorway, watching them drive away while grappling with unsettling possibilities. The ring's mysterious reappearance suggests Ben might know far more than he's revealing. This final scene leaves readers with a masterfully crafted uncertainty. Has Megan truly escaped the consequences of her actions, or is she now trapped in an even more elaborate web of deception? The truth remains elusive in a story where every character's motivations contain hidden depths and seemingly simple objects, like a recovered engagement ring, might carry devastating secrets. At its core, She's Not Sorry explores how ordinary people can commit extraordinary acts of violence when backed into corners of their own making. Megan's journey from compassionate nurse to calculated killer unfolds through a series of escalating choices, each seemingly justified by her desire to protect herself and her daughter. The novel challenges readers to consider where they would draw their own moral lines. Would you lie to protect a secret? Would you harm someone who threatened to destroy your family? Would you kill to save yourself from prison? By placing these questions in the context of a relatable protagonist, a hardworking single mother who loves her daughter, Kubica forces us to confront uncomfortable truths about human nature. Particularly disturbing is how Megan uses her medical knowledge to commit the perfect crime. As a nurse, she's sworn to do no harm, yet she leverages her understanding of hospital systems and medication effects to murder Caitlin in a way that appears to be a tragic mistake. This perversion of her healing role represents the ultimate betrayal of professional ethics. The story also examines how past trauma shapes present choices. Megan's sister's suicide and her failed marriage create vulnerabilities that Nat exploits. Similarly, Caitlin's troubled relationship with her parents drives her elaborate scheme of revenge. These psychological wounds don't excuse their actions, but help explain the twisted paths that lead them to violence. Perhaps most unsettling is the novel's suggestion that justice is rarely perfect. Milo Finch suffers for a crime he didn't commit, while Megan potentially escapes punishment for murder. The final ambiguity about Ben's knowledge leaves readers wondering if Megan will ever truly pay for what she's done, or if some secrets can remain buried forever, much like the truth about Sienna's paternity. In this moral quicksand, Kubica demonstrates how easily the line between victim and perpetrator can blur, leaving readers to question not just who is sorry, but who should be.